I'm Dave Hill, and this is the very first episode of Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident, which is pretty much the greatest podcast of all time, as far as I'm concerned.
1-800-301-3525.
Hello and welcome.
Hello and welcome.
Hello and welcome to Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident.
Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident.
Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident with me,
Dave Hill.
Dave Hill.
Dave Hill.
Bride of Cleveland. Walking Miracle.
New Hollywood It Girl. Third fastest kid in the seventh grade. Pride of Cleveland.
And the Hudson Valley Skeet Shooting Champion for 3 years running. And about 500 other things that most people can't handle. Anyway, hi, how are you? Hi, how are you?
Anyway, hi, how are you? I'm extremely jet-lagged.
I'm incredible. Experiencing crippling depression, but thank you for asking. Thank you so much for asking.
Thank you so much for asking. And thank you for listening to this.
This is the 15th episode.
The 25th magical episode.
The 54th episode.
The 84th episode of Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident. What critics are already calling... Oh, hang on. I think I have it here somewhere. Oh, never mind.
Hello and welcome to Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident with me, Dave Hill, the pride of Cleveland and beyond. I once got a free side of Texas toast at a diner in Sarasota, for example. Anyway, thank you for joining me once again for Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident. This is the 100th episode. Chris, let's try that again. After I say 100th, the 100th... Add like a bunch of echo. Let's try it. This is the 100th episode. Thank you for those of you who've been following my career from the very beginning. It only took us like 9 years to get to 100 episodes. Thank you to Shayna Feinberg, who helped me get it all started, and Chris Gersbeck, who's been my partner in crime as of late. And all this. Thank you for all of you for listening. There are several of you. Speaking of which, thank you to all of you for rating, reviewing, and subscribing on iTunes. Please continue to do so. It makes a huge difference. To my self-esteem primarily. But beyond that, it's also good, I guess. Subscribe, and also Stitcher, Spotify, wherever else you find incredible podcasts. Thanks for supporting this podcast on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Dave Hill. Help keep the light on, keep gas in the tank, keep us upgrading, getting new mics, sexy outfits, tighter pants, the whole deal. Before we get into the majesty of this, the 100th episode, I wanted to remind you, if you're in the New York, if you're within 500 miles, let's say, of New York City, please come to my fun new weird show, You Had to Be There, that I'm doing with my friends Jim Biederman and Jody Lennon. It's a show in which I recount my very important involvement in many great historical moments, some of which I wasn't even alive for. Anyway, it's a great show. Friday, February 1st, 7:30 p.m. These are all at QED Astoria. February 6th at 9 p.m., February 20th, 7:30 p.m., March 6th, 9 p.m., March 13th, 9 p.m., March 27th at 9 p.m. Go to QEDAstoria.com, find out more. Come on to these shows. They've been fun. They've been crowded. And I'm told a lot of people are making out afterwards. Can't verify that. But come to that. And anytime I leave the house, surround me. Please, it helps me get through the day. For this, the 100th episode, Chris had the great idea to go through the archives and celebrate some of the incredible moments of the show over the years. Chris has handpicked these items today, some of which, many of which, most of which, I have not heard myself until now. Since, you know, they originally aired. But, so I'm just going to tee them up Lucy's here next to me sleeping for the moment. That could change any second. We're living this shit minute to minute. Let's see, where is it? What's our first clip? Yes, my dear friend John Benjamin, comedian, you know him from Bob's Burgers, Archer, and a million other things. Here's a bit of our time together.
Liv Tyler lives the next block over, though, which is great for me.
Really? Do you see her a lot? Well, there's a lot of people.
I see her occasionally.
Yeah. I mean, I see tons of celebrities.
Yeah, you live a few blocks from here.
Well, so I live right next to Fantasy World, so I see celebrities go in and out.
Wait, Fantasy World?
That's a sex shop.
I'm trying to
Maybe
picture.
They're not celebrities, but they're...
Wait, Fantasy World on 7th?
In, like, latex.
The big one.
The superstore.
I went in there to buy a sex...
I go in there, and now, not only do I... Have I gone in there numerous times...
Ironically or sincerely? Or
both. Well, I do a lot of shopping for shows.
Yeah, I have a lot. I have
and
more.
A lot of my shows involve dildos and...
Sure.
And then a lot of my alone time involves pornography. So my private time and my public time are both served by really conveniently located next to my apartment where my kid is at. He knows Fantasy World well as well because I have to walk by it every day.
I have...
And they have like a huge picture window where they keep changing the... You know, it's like the Barneys of sex shop.
Yeah, of like little...
So they changed... Was the guy who does the windows, like Simon Doonan? He does Fantasy World as well. He mostly does Barneys, but once a year he'll do Fantasy World.
I bought a sex doll in there for a comedic internet video. And
An
inflatable one. I have it in here. That's the thing. Like, I have a lot of stuff in here that I got for videos that, if out of context, raise a lot of questions, like sex dolls. And like, I have this giant...
Oh, you mean if you die, a heart attack.
Why does Dave have a Rasta wig? Like that.
Well, the sex doll, for sure. Well, everything here would pretty much bring up multiple questions.
I basically don't turn anything down that is given to me or that I see that's available for purchase.
I do hope you die here now. I just think it would be poetic justice.
But the sex doll, I went in there... And
that's really funny. My girlfriend just discovered a 8-inch purple dildo in like my knapsack while she was straightening up, like opened it up and my kid was in the other room. She opened, you know, she was just doing laundry and cleaning stuff.
Oh,
and
I saw
she,
that.
She like, yeah, so she pulled it out. Like, gee, what? What the fuck is this?
That spot the dildo.
That's the dildo. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I saw it. I was able to spot it. It did get harder though.
We
each time.
Yeah, it's gonna get easier and easier. I'm gonna keep doing it. But that was, yeah, that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, it's different when you're alone, because, yeah.
Yeah.
If I die, they'll clean up and get rid of the stuff before
the cops
come.
Yeah, they'll take care of it. But I, you know.
You're just going to be like.
I need to assign.
They're going to find everything and have to decide what it means.
Yeah. Piece together their own story.
Right.
Well, because I.
That's far more interesting than having someone.
Well, if you
say my boyfriend is a comedian. He had a dildo. I don't know. Just can we not do this now?
The sex doll I bought though is a woman, but when I went in there, I said I'm looking for a sex doll. Confidently, I said it, and the woman directed me immediately to the male sex dolls.
Like, she was like, shut up.
Yeah. And I was like, no, I want a female.
Yeah, I know
one.
I know.
And she's like, is it for a friend then? Or I really had to talk her into showing me the female ones.
Is there no heterosexual? Because the first thing I ever bought there was the Accommodator, which, do you know that, which I love. That's like become a mini obsession of mine. Like, I want to use it, and no one will let me do it.
What's an account?
And I've already asked my girlfriend if I, like, can I do it with somebody just because just I want to find out. It's so silly.
What is it?
It's a chin dildo. But it's like a strap. You have to strap it to, like, it's like a latex.
Chin dildo.
So you sort of figure out the ergonomics, but it's a strap onto your head.
Sure.
It sticks out like there's a dildo coming off your chin.
The accommodator.
Which I assume is for, it could be for lesbians, but other.
Oh, I see.
Male,
so you can.
Male on female.
Get in there.
So you get in there, and then you can work the clitoris.
Okay, that's.
But you have to.
That is accommodating.
But it's so unaccommodating, like the way.
Yeah, because you would. Yeah, you'd have to, like.
It would take so much.
Move your jaw.
Move your neck back and forth, and then stick your tongue out. It seems like really.
Wow. I've seen forehead dildos, but that seems pointless now that I know about the accommodator. I guess.
Just get your. For your mouth to be on their ass?
I don't even know.
So you can eat out an asshole while you've.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Just like.
That seems also.
You know.
Flawed by design.
Yeah, it's like those Mexican places that are run by Chinese people. Makes no sense.
Oh, you mean, right.
You know what I mean? Oh, shit.
It's crashed?
No, we're good. I gotta delete some files real quick.
How about this one?
No. This is all killer.
Well, so I really want to try it. Because I'm interested in having an affair.
That seems reasonable.
But I'm also interested in the science of it.
Okay, I've freed up some space. We're good now. We're back.
What'd you get rid of? I hope that. It was also in my show, so it was the only official sponsor.
The accommodator?
Yeah. I forced the producer to contact them. They're a California company.
That's shocking.
And he called they have a factory there.
They're U.S. made. That's surprising.
Thank God. I love that. That we still have a... that we're still making things.
Yeah. I like the accommodator. That's why, like, a very gentle...
Well, that's the thing. It's so ironic because it's just when I've put it on, there's it can't possibly accommodate either person. It's the most unruly product. And the thing just flops around on your chin. I mean, you would take, like, a huge... It's like learning how to snowboard or something.
Now, from John Benjamin, I'd like to move on to Mr. Kevin Allison, dear friend and comedian. You know him from The State, of course, and from the Incredible Risk podcast and so many other things. Kevin went to kink camp and love it. She was a crew countess, killed every mistress,
to keep it young and fresh-faced. One of the things that I did do at kink camp this past year, which was an amazing experience, was I began to realize that in some of these BDSM exchanges, there, some of this power play is such that you can go beyond what you're physically attracted to. I met a guy who was maybe 500 pounds.
Whoa.
An enormous man. Huge guy.
How?
Like, wow. You know, the kind of guy that, like, looks kind of like...
Well, like Walter Hudson.
Well, what am I thinking? I don't know. What's the name of the big purple thing in McDonald's?
Oh.
Grimace?
Oh, yeah. You mean like where he's got like a big like...
Yeah, where he's got like a big
a huge... Like he hasn't seen his balls in 20 years.
Exactly.
Good. So I'm talking, and you hooked up with this guy?
I'm talking to this man over dinner, and the guy is like super intelligent and knows a lot. Like I was raised learning about, I was raised going to the opera and going to theater and stuff. My father was very cultured. So this guy, it turns out, is a writer on performing arts and knew all this stuff. And we had a fascinating conversation. And then he introduces the idea that for 15 years he's been studying whips, leather whips. And I was like, I found myself at the end of the dinner conversation saying, sir, I would like for you to whip me sometime this weekend. And he was like, great, how's 10 o'clock tomorrow?
And in the morning?
No. At night. So there was a storytelling show. I told a story. Jefferson was hosting the show at Kink Camp. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I've ever been like, oh, after I told my story, I was like, sorry, I've got to run.
I've got something.
Right. It's not a show across town. It's a whipping in the dungeon. So I go, and I take off all my clothes, and he says to me, I'm not gonna bind you. I'm not going to tie your wrist to a structure. I'm going to have you hold on to some chains. Because it's a whole different feeling when you feel like, I can run away if I want.
Sure.
And he had a 6-foot dog sledding whip called a signal whip. And it was a beautiful thing. And he was showing me how expensive it was and everything else. And, you know, even though I wasn't physically attracted to the guy at all, the fact that he had such a mastery over this, and he did all this psychological play with me. He was behind me making it like blow air on my back, and then he was like making it crack next to my ears.
He was really good.
He was really good. He was teaching me about the history.
And was he gay or straight?
He was both. Yeah, uh-huh. He was a bi guy. So I had to, and like you were saying, the screaming. Like, to me, one of the most amazing things is to hear your voice going, you know, like, doing things so incredibly loud in this huge space and then being like, oh, that's me. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? It's happening so automatically that you're not even conscious you're doing it until you're hearing it resonating. And it was just like, wow. It was remarkable. And I discovered that I really like pain. It's a weird...
So he's fully whipping you.
He was fully whipping me, really cracking that thing on my back. And I'm telling you, it stings like a motherfucker.
Does it break your skin?
It can. But he was
not... But he's a pro.
Afterwards, I did see there were welts raised on my back that, you know, were close to the skin breaking. So that was remarkable. And then that brings us to this past weekend.
Okay.
My Cliff's notes were not actually very short. But I think that all of this play, all of this BDSM kind of play does become a lot more interesting when it's like that first experience that I had with that Chinese kid where it's like, we've really gotten to know each other. Like it, mm-hmm. like it becomes fun because so much of the surprises are coming out of, holy crap, I didn't know you had that in you. You know uh-huh. what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
And then, so have you since seen that guy?
I have, but we're now just friends. Like, we've actually, like, even done some writing together and stuff like that.
Oh, nice.
But no, we haven't played together since. He's bi and is mostly into girls, so he's always like, nah, I'm so much more into girls these days when he talks to me. And mm-hmm. I think that's an excuse for, I'm really not all that attracted to you.
I'm into girls and, like, any guy but you. Thank you, Kevin. I cherish that one. Next, I'd like to check in with my friend Kristen Schell, comedian also on Bob's Burgers and many other programs and whatnot. She tells a great story from about the time she met Jeff. Maybe I shouldn't spoil it. Say, okay, I'm not even going to tell you what she's going to talk about. Baby, hey, treat me real mean. I didn't talk to you about this, but Bart Coleman was telling me this story when we were both at Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
That Jeff Tweedy came up to you and said that he saw you in the crowd. He was in a bad mood, and then he saw you that you were having a good time.
Yeah.
And then he said it made him have a good time.
Yeah.
Did you shit and piss everywhere when he said that?
Yeah.
That would be so weird.
So dreamy. Yeah, we were at Bonnaroo and we were dancing. You weren't there.
I was at Bonnaroo. I wasn't at Wilco.
You didn't go see Wilco.
I didn't see them. I can't remember why. I really liked them, but I didn't see them for some reason.
Yeah, we were doing shows. Dave and I were doing shows at Bonnaroo in the comedy tent, and then after our show, we could go see other bands. And Phoenix was there, and the IAS, and Wilco was on the big stage. So I was able to get to, like, the front of the Wilco concert because we had, like, all access passes for being in the festival.
Yeah.
And I was dancing, and there's just this moment where like, you know, it's still far enough away, but I was like, is Jeff Tweedy staring at me right now? And then I was like, no, you are such an asshole for even thinking that, you know? Like, what a self-absorbed thing to think. And then we were having dinner at the tent, like, for artists to eat dinner. And they're like, oh, shit, Wilco came. Because it's mostly the comedians and, like, bands. Like,
well, riffraff.
Yeah, the riffraff would eat the free food.
Yeah.
But they came in. Yeah, and then Bart Coleman was sitting by me. That was the best part, because Bart could tell the story to everybody, and I didn't have to.
He was in shock.
He was in shock.
He was really, like, I mean, in a great way. He was, like, so excited to tell people the story.
Thing. Yeah, and then Jeff Tweedy came over and he was like, I just had to tell you, like, I'm a big fan and I saw you having fun and it just turned the set around. And I was like, do you want to? And Bart was like, aah. And I was like, do you want to sit with us? And he's like, no. Magical. Make up your
mind. Maybe I get off of you alone. Thank you, Kristen. That was good times. Moving on, my dear friend Martha Plimpton. Well, this is, you know, we're both thespians, as you can imagine. And so we talk about bit of that. But talk is kind of cheap. Maybe hit the streets and run. Maybe take your time and run. Which do you prefer, acting on screen or like doing plays and such?
That's a question you're supposed to ask.
I know, but I'm genuinely wondering it. That'll be the only question like that the whole time. It's the only actual question that I have.
It's not
the rest is just flying by this.
Right. It's not. They're totally different.
Apples and oranges.
Apples and oranges, Dave. They're completely different. The amount of work for both is, they're both exhausting, but they both take different levels of, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
They're different things you have to know how to, they're different skill sets.
Yeah.
Put it that way. It'd be like, it's like cross-country skiing as opposed to, like, slaloming.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, I get it.
But which one is which? See, I don't even know yet. Are the movies the slalom, or that's being on screen the slaloming, or is the theater the slaloming?
I think the theater is the slaloming.
You think so?
Slaloming.
Why would you think that the theater's like slaloming?
Well, in my tiny bit of experience
slaloming,
with theater,
slaloming.
I know, it's one of those words that doesn't make any sense the more you say it. It's, I think, because, I don't know, because when you're doing like a play, and I've only done two plays in my life.
You've done two plays?
Yeah. Believe me, I was surprised myself. No, I'd never done, because I never did any of that. You know, I'm like a wild horse with show business.
No, I know that.
Late bloomer, and I had no training. You know, I had to, I was like, and I was never in the high school play or anything, mm-hmm. is my point. And I got asked to be in this off-Broadway play a couple years ago at the Vineyard Theater. Mm-hmm. Do you know it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's reputable.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone, and they just gave me the role.
Wow.
I didn't even have to audition. Everyone else had to. but everyone in this thing were like Broadway, you know, off-Broadway.
What was the play again?
It was called Iowa 08. It wasn't like it wasn't like Fiddler on the Roof or anything. It was like part of like a festival of some sort. So it was only like 9 performances.
Okay, okay.
And so all they were all like, the only people that, I didn't want anyone to know I had never been in a play before, because mm-hmm. they were all like serious, like Inherit the Wind. They had just done a lot of these people. That was like a real play.
Right.
And so I didn't want anyone to know. And then they had like the flyer, the postcard program thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the asterisk, right. Member Actors Equity. And everyone has that,
and
except for me. And I'm like, wouldn't the proper uses of the asterisk be just to put an asterisk by my name,
right.
and say not member of Actors Equity? And they're like, yeah, doesn't work that way. And
right.
And then the whole time we were rehearsing, they'd be like, Dave, can you move like stage right, stage, which to this day I don't know.
You don't know.
And even like from music and stuff, I've been playing in bands for years, mm-hmm. still don't know. And I finally learned upstage, downstage, I learned right. that, but at the time I didn't know, so I would just kind of hover around, and then the director would kind of like,
right.
he knew I had never been in a play before. Like they told him. And then the opening night, I was in the green room,
mm-hmm.
and one of the actresses came in and said, is there a curtain call? And I didn't really know. I had a sense what a curtain call would be,
mm-hmm.
the bowing part.
Right, right.
But I was like, maybe there's a different kind. So I was like, yeah, you know that one scene where we're all out there and like the one guy says this. After that, the lights are going to go off. And then when the lights are off, we're all going to walk up to the front of the stage. When they come back on, we're all going to bow together. And she's looking at me like I was the biggest fucking moron in the world. But I was just didn't want to tell her I wasn't sure.
That one scene. Yeah, the end of the play. That scene, the end of play. When the curtain call happens.
And now, let's get magically whisked away to Paul F. Tompkins' living room in Los Angeles, where we end up talking about New York.
Why did you move here as opposed to New York, the next town over? I think it's a good move. This is more of a show.
Like most things in my life, I did not put a ton of thought into it, but a girl that I liked was moving out here, and so I followed her out here.
Did she like you?
She did for a time. We had dated very briefly, and we were not dating at the time that she moved out here. We were still friends, and I thought, I will move out there, because I needed to make a change from Philadelphia, where the comedy scene had dried up, you know, because I started when the comedy boom of the late 80s had started, and then by the mid-90s, a lot of the work was gone. And I was back to working a day job, and I realized, well, I got to do something. And then this girl was moving to Los Angeles, and I thought, I will go out there too. It seemed like a great idea. And obviously, secretly, like the idea is we will get back together, and it'll be like a romantic comedy, you know. And we did not get back together. But it turned out to be a really smart move. It was the best thing for me, you know. Because if I'd gone to New York, I don't know that I could have hacked it. I think I was too delicate for that at the time, you know, because New York has a more obvious aggression that I think I would have folded under, and LA's aggression is way more subtle.
But it's much stronger.
Yeah, but I felt it is. Well, I will tell you this, Los Angeles, the Greyhound station The entrance to the Greyhound station, the place where you go to leave Los Angeles, says, "Welcome to Hollywood." And so that to me is like the perfect summation of it all. It's like as you're leaving, like, my dreams didn't come true and I'm going back to where I came from. It says, "Welcome to Hollywood."
Thank you, PFT. Maybe we should add echo after PFT. Paul F. Tompkins. Sharp dresser, by the way. I don't say that lightly. And here's my friend, Dick Cavett. You heard me, Dick Cavett. If you're scared, I'll concern for your health.
Just pretend that I'm somebody. No, I wanted to say, you, on your show, you had the Smothers Brothers on, and with a nutritionist. I can't remember her name, but she was on.
Yes.
It was Smothers Brothers after the show had been canceled, a nutritionist. It may have just been the three of them. And so I looked her up. She ended up, and she was talking about the proper diet and how to live to be 100 or whatever. Yes. She died less than 2 years later.
I didn't know that. Do you have an album of some sort? You keep all these records and things in?
No.
That I did not know.
Yeah, that's right, Adele Davis. She wore like a very...
Oh, Adele Davis, yeah. Absolutely. Everybody Lecithin. That was... you don't hear about Lecithin anymore. Uh-oh, I have the anagram curse. Lecithin is an anagram for hint lice.
Hint? My question...
I'm never wrong. Check me on
it. Yeah, but when... Do these anagrams hit you? Like, did it just hit you now? Like, couldn't perceive?
Yeah, they hit me, and I rearranged the word that I heard without meaning to or consciously doing it. And the two, now that you've raised this subject, or Kadebchik, is that I played a word game all one summer with in a house sharing out in the island. And a lady brought the word
Pukwaki. Ham salad.
Now cut that out. It was a game where you throw cubes into the timer and you make as many words as you can. And this trigger. This is Pukwaki. It's boggle you don't touch. Listen, you move them. And I got so I couldn't stop doing it day and night in my head.
It's like Tetris.
Yes. I'd see the word.
I'm sorry.
I'd see the word. Let that pass.
We'll edit that out.
I'd see the word Mr. on the Mr. Donut sign. The donut was burned out, and I said just Mr. And I thought, merits, remits, timers. And it would go on. There were several more. But the scariest was passing the marquee of the East Hampton Movie Theater, and it was Lawrence of Arabia, and it was the old-fashioned stick the letters on, and probably the kid who did it didn't know who any of the actors were. And so it said, oddly, Lawrence of Arabia, starring Alec Guinness, who, of course, is in it. And I had just had a show with Peter O'Toole, so I thought, I got to take this so O'Toole can see who the star of Lawrence of Arabia is. And then I drove another half block and thought, genuine laces? No, I thought, genuine, two S's in there, genuine class. Genuine class is Alec Guinness. Now, don't all check it out now. But.
Can you do it to your own name, or are your powers useless against yourself?
If you assign me and say, do one with my name, it blocks. But pretend your name is...
Dick Cavett. What?
What's your name?
Spiro Agnew.
Grow a penis.
I was going to...
Or a plane grows for a children's audience.
Plane grows.
Yeah.
Wait, but that's one of my earliest memories of you is on The Tonight Show. You did... not that you didn't just think of that, but you said that on The Tonight Show. Yeah. Spiro Agnew. That's my favorite one.
Yeah, it's a beautiful one because it's so apt. I had him on the show, my early daytime show. If only I had known it then. But I didn't. Go ahead.
Wait, that was it?
Yeah.
My next question.
I don't know if I'd have said it. I had Timothy Leary on the next day. It was my first week, still petrified at doing a 90-minute talk show, and people are signaling you, and you're supposed to be listening, like what you see on the screen, just two people. And somebody else has just lettered a sign and held it up and taken it down. And I don't know what I was supposed to do. And all this stuff coming in five directions. And I'm trying not to look rigid with nerves, and then you think, the guest's lips have stopped moving. They were talking. I have no idea what they were talking about. So you have to have a general, you know, do you pee in the shower, or, you know, some question that would fit just about anything. Margaret Thatcher, do you pee in the shower?
Well, clearly.
Clearly. Well, that's a healthy sign.
Yeah, you gotta stay hydrated.
A while back, my dear friend Bridget Everett from HBO's Camping swung by. Here's what we chatted about.
Leading the way as our ages guide.
I shouldn't be talking about watching porn.
Why not?
I don't know.
This is...
You watch porn, right? You don't.
I do.
You got
I do.
It together. You don't need porn. You're
I live it. No. No, I do. I'm a bit disappointed in myself. In recent years, I've been watching less of it.
And is the desire down or the need down? Or
I don't know.
Or you don't want to talk about it?
I don't know
it.
What it's about. Like, I found that my sort of late night internet activity usually involves...
Is it tweeting?
No, like, I look at guitars and, like, watch people play guitar solos on YouTube.
I do that with kitty cat videos, but that's...
Oh, that's good.
That's really bad.
But I watch less... I think with porn, my problem with porn is I'll be like, oh, man, there's that naked chick. She's so hot. Mm-hmm. So she's naked. And then this guy walks in and he's like got like an armband tattoo, like a...
Oh, you're watching the
wrong porn.
Yeah, or you could just switch to POV stuff, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, a lot of people like that.
Yeah, yeah, because then you don't have to see the guy.
Yeah.
And then
because
he's always got
it.
Like a goatee and he's
I hate
like,
that.
Yeah.
Too tan. But
and
then
they're
those,
like misogynists a lot of time. Yeah. They're like, fuck yeah, suck it.
And the girls are talking like...
Yeah, yeah, I don't like that.
I don't like that either.
I feel like it's... not into that.
I'm not into that stuff either. But I have very specific search words.
What do you... Oh, what can you talk about that?
I don't know. You know, we're just getting to know each other.
This is great for the ratings.
Oh, it's great for the ratings.
Yeah.
I like... well, there's three different genres. There's like, of course, like Lexington Steele and like Shane Diesel. And,
oh, Lexington and like, Steele. He's a shaved head African-American
Yeah,
fella.
They call him the Impaler.
Because he has a big donger?
It's big, and he's aggressive. So
oh, like
that.
A lot of name-calling?
Not name-calling. Name-calling I don't always like, but it's
no,
just, you know.
He does a lot of punishing.
Yeah.
He really puts it to the ladies.
It's like a workout, I guess.
How big is his donger?
It's like, it's coming up on a foot.
That, like, for real?
I mean, it's big.
Let's get a look.
Yeah, he's a, you know, there's him and there's this guy, there's Blackzilla. I think there's two of them. You can Google Mandingo. You get some stuff will come up. But Lexington Steele's sort of the... He wins a lot of those AVAs.
Good for him.
And I only know that because I was surfing the internet one night, and Dave Navarro was hosting them. I was like, what's he doing there? And he was saying all this, like, kind of like racist shit.
Wait, Dave Navarro was?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, so you were watching the AMAs?
AVAs?
Adult Video Awards.
Yeah, I think that's what it stands for. I just happened to be passing channels, and then Dave Navarro was hosting them for some reason. I don't know why that made me stop, because I'm not like,
on
a
television?
Fan of his. Yeah, he's a tiny little person.
He seems... It's weird. Like, I like Jane's Addiction, or, you know,
and but he seems very cheesy.
Yeah.
Like, surprisingly, for having been a part of, like, a cool band.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it seems like he's kind of an L.A. cheese ball.
He feels like the kind of guy that would, like, you know, like, he may even have one of those, like...
I bet he does, an armband tattoo. Yeah, I'm sure he's a nice guy, don't get me wrong. Wait, so what are the search words that you look for?
Oh, God, I feel so... that I sometimes...
Lexington Steel.
Yeah, Lexington Steel. Sometimes I do, like, cream pie.
Cream pie. That is... That's where you jizz on some stuff?
Not on.
In?
Yeah.
And then, and then they squirt it out?
I don't ever watch that part. I don't like that part.
You'd get out. Get it.
Yeah.
What's the last one?
You're not going to want to look at me.
No, I mean...
Grandpa?
Really? Wait, really? There's a search for that in porn?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of things that come up. Grandpa fantasy porn? Yeah. I don't understand it myself, but it's like, it's not like I would... it's hard to explain.
Okay.
Thank you, Bridget. And now... I would like to check in with my fellow thinking man, Malcolm Gladwell. I believe this was done at his apartment just blocks from where I live. I'm not going to say where either one of us live. Well, don't you find that, though? I think if most people got themselves in peak physical condition, they would be much more attractive.
Yeah. I guess, but I wonder if it's beyond... I've always thought it was beyond that, that if you both have a lot of talent and you are physically attractive, it's one more advantage, because people just treat you... It's one more reason for people to want to invest in you.
Yeah.
Right? So if you have 2 7-year-old hockey players... both of whom show a lot of promise, and one's ugly and one's a handsome young kid, the handsome young kid's going to get more attention.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, if you can sort of... Look, there's all this great research on, like, how really good quarterbacks are almost invariably attractive. For the same reason, that people are more willing to listen to, invest in, encourage the handsome one and the non-handsome one. And it's true, if quarterbacks are, as a group, an insanely good-looking set of people.
They are.
Right? It's sort of astonishing when you think about them. And that's so much, because it's so much, because they have to play a leadership role, and so much of what we respond to in leaders is just a kind of, you know, the handsome one, the cute ones get our attention. Right? And a lot of being a quarterback is getting people's attention.
Yeah. I never thought of that.
Do you think the same is true of comics?
Ooh. No. It's almost a reverse, maybe.
That it's easier to laugh at someone who you don't find that attractive.
I think so. I mean, like there's a few exceptions, but, I think you're forced to develop your sense of humor or your comedic skills as...
compensation.
Of shortcomings in other areas. Which is why... Well, like, for example... Yeah, I mean, most... I mean, there's a few exceptions, but...
If you were a super, I mean, let's just say this is present company excluded.
Sure, sure.
But if you were super, super handsome and were extroverted or wanted to be a performer, you wouldn't choose comedy, because comedy is the highest risk of all of the, right? You'd just go into acting.
Yeah.
Right. You wouldn't engage in the... Right, you'd do it if you didn't have a... I mean, you'd be drawn into comedy if you didn't have a kind of sure shot at the... Because being an actor is much lower risk than being a comic.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in comedy... Also, I think that people... I mean, for example, my constant working out, I make sure to never push it so far as to lose my comedic build. Do you have to, you know, because as you know, I take my shirt off sometimes in performance, And I started to lose weight, and a couple people said, you know, it's not really that funny anymore.
If you had a six-pack, it is no... this is the one area where if you had a six-pack, it wouldn't work at all. In fact, it would be seen as kind of... somehow it's sort of tasteless.
Yeah, it would be off-putting. And I have a couple... I have a friend, a comedian... do you know Hal Sparks? Actor, no. Comedian, musician... but he's in very good shape. And I told him, I said, you know, you just make it that much harder on yourself. He said, I know, I really have to work on my material much harder because I'm in good shape.
I always wondered about, so someone like Dave Chappelle, right, who sort of was about as funny as anyone in his day.
Yeah.
I guess he sort of stopped doing, I don't know what he does now, but he wasn't unattractive. But he wasn't classically... He had a funny face. Let's say there was something about his face that accentuated... There was a kind of, you know, there was a kind of natural goofiness in his manner. And when he did... you know, when he put on his white person voice, for example...
Mm-hmm.
His face contorted in such a way that made it doubly hilarious. Like,
yeah.
You know, there was some... But it was all because his face isn't typical... There's something in the constellation of features that's kind of inherently comic.
Yeah.
You're primed to laugh just by looking at him. And that's, there's something, that I'm sure that's a huge part of his, you know, that there was a kind of look in his eye as well when he was doing something mischievous, which, again, enhanced the, I'm thinking of the, do you remember the, it's one of my favorite, I mean, there's so many of his sketches that are hilarious, but there was one he did on with John Mayer.
Oh, yeah.
White people music and black. Remember when he's...
Yeah.
When they play... they want to see what white people will dance to. Remember this?
Mm-hmm.
They play this really bad guitar, you know, and they have a hidden camera, and then they go undercover into a barbershop in Harlem, and it was just this sort of absolutely inspired... But it was all set up by this look he had. He would give the camera, which was this kind of, we're engaged in this, you know, clandestine, you know, top secret operation here. And I mean, just invested the whole enterprise with this kind of, with the appropriate note.
Mm-hmm.
But it all started with that look on his face,
which, yeah,
was so priceless.
Yeah, he's incredible. I hope he comes back.
What happened to him?
I just heard he's crazy. Just as a simple... I think that's basically, that's just what I heard. I think he just lost his mind, from what I'm told.
Well, you would know this. Was it he was doing, when he was doing his show, so he was doing half an hour of original material every, how many shows was he doing a year?
The television show?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean.
Suppose he did 20 shows a year.
Yeah, probably something like that.
And that is to be funny. Where you're carrying the burden of the... It's not like you have a huge ensemble cast. And where I understand that he and his writer were doing most of the writing.
Yeah,
it's an unbelievable creative burden.
Yeah.
To come up with that much material. Right? I mean, that's what always struck me. Like, you couldn't do... I mean, he's sort of correct in a sense that you can't do a show like that for more than 2 or 3 years without, you know, sort of petering out. It's just impossible.
Yeah, that's what I really like about the like a lot of the British programs. They just do six episodes, maybe two seasons, and then they just go out on top.
Yeah.
Move on to the next thing.
No, I mean, it's the same thing with op-ed columnists in the New York Times. You know, you really think someone's got you is going to write twice a week all year round? That's 100 columns. A week? Are you kidding me? Someone's got 100 good ideas? No one has 100 good ideas. Right? People always complain about, you know, Tom Friedman. He's writing 100 columns a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a perfect world, he'd write 25, and they would all be fantastic. And you would say, he's a genius.
Yeah.
He's just being forced to do something that no human being can do. I would never... Someone offered me $10 million a year to be an New York Times op-ed columnist. I'd say, no, it's impossible. can you think about what hell your life would be if you had to sit down and come up with 2 column ideas a week?
Yeah, that would be... Well, what do you do? Like, you've had now 4 best-selling books. Do you feel...
Over 12 years.
But I mean, but still, I mean, do you...
It's a very, very different, like... And God knows, I probably will never write another one.
Really? You don't think you'll write another book?
I don't have a good idea. I mean, I have no... You have to wait for the idea. You can't just do them. You have to kind of...
How do you... When you... Do you... This is something I was wondering with your books. Like, there's... You have to leave in a second.
You have to go soon. But yeah.
Do you come up with the topic, the area you want to explore, or do you have this sort of hypothesis and then go after that
thing? It's like, I don't know. It's a little bit of both. It just depends. I mean, sometimes you have a great story and then you would try to find an idea to attach to it. And sometimes it's the opposite. But I don't, there's no one way, you know, it's kind of, you're so desperate that you'll take anything in whatever form it comes.
And then have there been topics you've explored where then you say, oh my gosh, this is actually the opposite of what I originally thought I was, where I was going to land?
Oh yeah, all the time. I mean, I've gotten more interested in storytelling recently as a kind of, because once you know how to tell a story, you extended your range indefinitely. Like, mm-hmm. It's funny, when I I guess it was your last explosion with John Hodgman, but you told that story at the beginning about being mistaken for a woman.
Oh, yeah.
I have to say, it was like, someone who spends a lot of time thinking about telling stories, I found that was like such genius.
Oh, thank you.
It was this beautifully constructed story, technically. I mean, I don't mean to get into kind of boring writer speak, but it was a very, very, very simple idea, right? Which was extended hilariously over whatever it was, 10 minutes, just by pure kind of narrative genius. It was like...
Oh, thank you.
You know, you took your time. The thing that people always... The mistake you always make with, well, you know this, with telling stories is that people rush it. They have no confidence in the material, right? So they're panicked. And then the minute they're panicked and you smell it as an audience, you're done. You lose interest. But that one unfolded so kind of like with a sort of sense of anticipation. And you knew there was never going to be some massive payoff because you'd already, you know...
Well, there never is with me.
But that's sort of part of what's funny was that you knew you were getting sucked into a story that was not going to have a kind of...
Wow, that was fun, walking down memory lane. Dave Hill's podcasting incident. The 100th episode. Isn't it weird to think that I was just 19 then when it all started? Lucy wasn't even born. I'm sorry, I'm hallucinating. I'm on a lot of cold medicine right now. Let's just drive this bitch home. Thank you, Chris Gersbeck, my partner in crime, the brains behind the operation. Thanks once again to all of you for listening over the years. Can't wait till we have 100 more in the can. Support us on Patreon, patreon.com/Dave Hill. Go to my website, Dave Hill Online, to find out when I'm coming to your town. What is it? DaveHillOnline.com. Wouldn't kill me to learn my own website address, would it? Oh, man. Gotta stop it. I gotta read the label on the pills. Jesus. Anyway, until next time, stay street, stay hydrated, and get tested. I love you so much.